Okay, our next speaker is Kevin Jackson, and he'll be talking about changes in carbohydrate status of winter overseeded Bermudagrass.
All right, thanks, Chrissy. Again, my name is Kevin Jackson. I study under Dr. Cale Bigelow at Purdue University, and I've got the privilege of presenting this collaboration between four outstanding land-grant universities that took place over the last couple of years. What do we know about Bermudagrass? Obviously, for our friends down here in the south and in the transition zone, it's probably the most favorable turf species when we talk about a recreational turf setting, be it golf course fairways, tees, or athletic fields. Personally, one of my favorite grasses for athletic fields. And it tolerates a lower mowing height, and it's a really durable, persistent stand of turf. There are some limitations. I think all of us are familiar with, about the time soil temperatures reach about 50 degrees Celsius, the turf's going to start to go dormant. And with that dormancy brings a straw brown color, could lead to some late season, early season use limitations. The potential for winter kill exists. We know about that a little bit in West Lafayette. And the need for winter overseeding obviously is an option for those that want to keep a green color. But there are challenges with that process, including removing or even spraying out the overseeded species. So why do we overseed? The number one reason is obviously aesthetics. We can get a green color that'll persist over that dormant period of Bermudagrass. May or may not improve surface playability. Also possible protection from severe winter temperatures. And there may be an absorption of heat and a warming that may occur from that dark green covering that results from the overseeded ryegrass or whatever species you may choose. So what do we know or what do we think we know based around this this overseeding and Bermudagrass dormancy? So in the transition zone and further north, Bermudagrass, obviously we talked about that being sensitive to winter temperatures and may have a prolonged dormancy period. Well, it seems like winter gets kind of less harsh and shorter. Perennial ryegrass is the species of choice for overseeding Bermudagrass golf course fairways and athletic fields. And suggested planting rates, based on some work that's been done previously, range from 245 to 1470 kilograms per hectare, which equates to about 5 to 30 pounds per thousand. And it's not uncommon for some fields and some stadium athletic fields to put even more seed than that on their fields over the course of a dormancy period. We also know from some research that was done previously by Dr. Goatley, Dr. Zhang et al. About blankets and the effect that that may have on carbohydrate storage during the wintertime. This chart here, I want to draw your attention to the 04-05 period here. We can see if we go to the far left, if we come out of dormancy, when we're coming out of dormancy in this late spring, well, springtime period, we can see that the uncovered plots here did have a significant difference in terms of total non-structural carbohydrate storage than those plots that got covered. However, when we moved to the next winter, which was 05-06, there really wasn't a significant effect here, over that period coming out of dormancy. So again, what else do we think we know? So overseeded areas often have density coverage issues when we're coming out of dormancy. I'm going to show you a picture here in a little bit representing, why what that looks like. I think we're all familiar with it. Seeding rate may influence the severity of thinning. Logic would say that the more seed you put down, the more competition you have for nutrients. Maybe that possibly could lead to a thinning of the canopy. But what is really unclear and kind of the question we wanted to answer is why does this occur? So the rule of thumb, we kind of say that Bermudagrass needs about 80 to 100 days of no competition with other species to fully recover and replenish carbohydrates during the summer. We also use selective herbicides to remove those overseeded species and give that Bermudagrass the maximum opportunity to get to that 80 to 100 days of no competition. So again, I talked about what these surfaces may look like. The photo in the background is from Kentucky, which was after the polar vortex winter in 2013 and 14. And we can see that some of those areas just aren't greening up, aren't coming back. We can also see in the photo from Dr. Goatley on the left, this looks like a soccer situation here. On the left, we've got a playing surface that's been overseeded. And on the right, it looks like we've kind of got a sideline situation that was not overseeded. So we can kind of see the effect here of a thin canopy and a less dense turf versus a turf on the right that had not been overseeded. what's the knowledge gap? Obviously, how does winter overseeding affect the physiological aspects of the plant? So what's going on over these dormancy months physiologically that may lead to this particular issue, thinning of the canopy, once we emerge from dormancy? So does this overseeding practice affect the plant's carbohydrate status positively or negatively? And does any overseeding have any sort of insulating effect, meaning are we protecting those stolons, those rhizomes, the Bermuda grass? Are we protecting it or somehow keeping it in a warmer, quote-unquote, warmer situation with an overseeded ryegrass? So, again, logic would argue that we could probably say yes to all of the above, but we wanted to try to answer the question. Again, since we've got a situation where overseeded species are competing for essential space, light, water, physical properties, as well as nutrient in the soil, logically you would think that may be the answer. So we had a study which was conducted at four locations in Fayetteville, West Lafayette, Lexington, and Blacksburg. These four locations, I'll show you a map in a minute for those of you who may not be familiar with where those places are, kind of represented a nice mix of geographical locations. Two different types of cultivars, Patriot and Tifway Bermuda grass, were used, and we had three different seeding rates. So we had 0 pounds per thousand, 735 kilograms per hectare, which represented 15 pounds per thousand, and 1,470 kilograms per hectare, which represented 30 pounds per thousand. We used Futura 2000, which was a DLF tick seed cultivar, and all sites had been maintained under moderate fertility prior to overseeding. I should also mention that we broomed the seed into the canopy. So once we put it on the canopy, we did use a broom to kind of get that through the canopy and try to get more contact with the soil. I mentioned the four locations. You can see Blacksburg there in the foothills of Virginia, of the Appalachian Mountains. We've got Lexington, Kentucky, Fayetteville, our furthest south location, and us up in West Lafayette, Indiana there, in northwest Indiana. So the Patriot Bermuda grass was located in West Lafayette, was maintained and mowed at about 19 millimeters or 3/4 of an inch. In Fayetteville, Arkansas, the study was conducted on Tifway Bermuda grass, also mowed at about 3/4 of an inch. Blacksburg used Patriot, similar to West Lafayette, maintained at about an inch. And then Lexington also used Tifway, which was maintained at about 19 millimeters or 3/4 of an inch. We also looked at temperatures in the soil-canopy interface. We used the Hobo soil probes, and we inserted those about in the upper 12 millimeters. So if you want to kind of envision that rhizome area, and we measured temperatures throughout the winter. So how do we go about collecting samples? Again, we collected samples at three different dates. Basically, what we did, we took plugs at representative samples within the plots. We immediately dried those, which immediately turned into hockey pucks. You can see the hammer that we used up there to kind of break up the soil, and then we went through by hand and removed the ryegrass tissue, also kind of removed some of the leaf tissue and really concentrated on the stolons that were in the sample. This is a kind of a nice representation here where you can see the plug with no overseeding, the plug with 15 pounds per thousand in the middle, and then on the right with 30 pounds per thousand. So those of you who may not be familiar with an overseeding situation, you can kind of see the densities differences between those three. So again, the carbohydrate status of the Bermuda grass stolon was determined at three times at each location. But those three times were mid-December, late winter, and then as dormancy broke in March and April. Ground tissue was analyzed for total non-structural carbohydrates and other sugars at Virginia Tech. The method is listed below down there. Again, four locations, three seeding rates, three sampling times. Each treatment was replicated four times at each site to a randomized complete block design. We did an ANOVA through SAS and ran the statistics through there to get the numbers. So what did we find out here? Well, based on the statistics, we saw that there was some significance with location. Obviously, kind of provided the most significance. Date did have some effect, and there was an interaction between location and date. It was interesting that we didn't see a significance with seed rate. Location and seed together, date and seed, and then a three-way interaction did not occur between location, date, and seed. So I'll kind of walk you through this a little bit. I want to kind of concentrate on the top. I want to look at this in three parts. The first part is total non-structural carbohydrates. The middle will be starches. The bottom will be sucrose. So if we look at total non-structural carbohydrates, if we look here in Blacksburg, there was a difference here in the February, March, and April. However, in Fayetteville and Lexington, total non-structural carbohydrates did not really have any significance during the three periods that we sampled them. But if we look at West Lafayette, we can see that there was a difference here between December, February, March, and April. There was some significance there. Starches followed a somewhat similar pattern. We can see some differences here in Fayetteville. No differences in Kentucky, West Lafayette. Basically similar through the winter, and then when we came out of dormancy, there was a little bit of a difference. Similarly with sucrose. Means in the same row, this was a Fisher's protected LSD at that 0.05 significance. Okay, soil temperatures. Soil temperatures, again, I don't want to get too caught up in a lot of these numbers. What I really want to focus on is this means right here. So if we look at the means at the three locations, if we look at Arkansas, if we look at means there, we range from 8.6 to 9.1 degrees Celsius. Kentucky, 6.1 to 6.5, and in Blacksburg, it was 5.6 to 5.9. So all in all, there really was not a whole lot of fluctuation at all in soil surface temperatures. So these temperatures were taken, through that winter period, 2014, 15, all the way through 2015. So it was interesting to me. I thought maybe that, overseeded plots would pull in more heat. It seems to make sense, but it didn't really work out that way when we ran the numbers. I want to go back a little bit to, what happened in West Lafayette where we saw some of those differences. I want to draw your attention to this graph here where we're about at the end of the year. Headed right into January, and you can see a nice kind of steady state here, which represented probably frozen ground. Nice ground got frozen, temperatures didn't fluctuate a whole lot. And we had an event here, maybe right at the end of January, where we spiked up, soil temperatures spiked up to 50 and then promptly crashed again, well below what we were seeing here in this nice, solid, steady state. So I think possibly, I don't know for sure, but I think that may kind of explain some of the differences that I pointed out here in terms of total non-structural carbohydrates, starch, and sucrose. So I couldn't tell you exactly what was going on there at that particular time, but it's interesting to look back at this and kind of correlate that with the data. So finally, in summary, geographic location appeared to be the largest factor in carbohydrate depletion. Winter overseeding appeared to have no effect on plant carbohydrate levels at any location. Again, that surprised me somewhat. And surface soil temperatures from overseeding were somewhat variable, with only slight increases that I pointed out there in the overseeded plots in Lexington and Fayetteville. So again, this kind of leaves some unanswered questions. Again, why did this occur? Getting back to this picture and the soccer situation here with the overseeded playing surface and a sideline, the thin canopy. There's still some questions left unanswered. Next steps, obviously, to continue to investigate and attempt to understand why spring decline occurs with the practice of winter overseeding. How can we better manage this? Additional factors, additional things that come into play here. Higher seeding rates, is that going to have an effect? Mowing heights, is there a mowing height correlation there between, logic would tell me that if we leave maybe more plant tissue on the surface instead of mowing it so low, maybe that puts it in a better situation coming out of dormancy. Nutritional effects. Prior to overseeding, I believe Dr. Goatley and some others have kind of investigated looking at nitrogen levels prior to going into overseeding and then during the grow-in. Obviously, traffic is a factor. And then the cumulative effect of plots multiple years. So if we're overseeding year after year after year in the same place, is that depleting these nutrients? Is that depleting the canopy to where it's coming out of dormancy, not in an optimal condition? So with that, I'd like to acknowledge all the universities that were involved here, including DLF Pickseed, Seed Research, the USGA, and the Midwest Regional Turf Foundation. So with that, I'll take any of your questions.
Okay, we have time for one really quick question.
Yes, sir. Dr. Richardson.
So what do you think you're doing?
I think it comes down to the carrying capacity of the soil, if you ask me. I think, we're stuffing all of these plants into one particular area. We've got Bermuda grass. We're putting ryegrass on top of it. And overall, I just think that the competition, whether it's the physical parameters or just simply the nutrients and the carrying capacity of the soil, I think that's got something to do with it. I'd like to dig into it a little further.